Welcome in to this unnamed podcast, which might not be unnamed for much longer. I'm Tyler Bischoff over at MountainWestConnection.com. He's Mike Grimala over at RunRevs.com. All right, Mike, we apparently both have an idea. I'll give you mine. Curling the Stash.
Curling the Stash.
As a name for the show. What's your idea?
My idea, it was the Towel Boys. With you and I,
the towel
with you
boys.
And I being the Towel Boys.
Okay.
I can give you the reasoning behind that.
All right, let's hear it.
See, you know, Towel Boys has sort of a certain connotation. You know, they're the guys, you know, maybe end of the bench, little bit geeky, you know, in that sort of sense. I feel like you and I, no offense intended, sort of lean more towards the, you know, statistical side, maybe the wonkier side of basketball, maybe get into the stats a little bit. And then also it ties back into Jerry Tarkanian, UNLV's greatest coach, also famous for chewing a towel on the sidelines. So therefore you and I would be the Towel Boys when we do this podcast.
Does that mean Jerry Tarkanian chews on us?
That if he wants to. If he wants to come on to this podcast, I'd let him chew on us.
All right. I like it. That's what we're going with, the Towel Boys.
You're dropping your idea. You don't want to argue for your idea.
Yes. No, I like yours better. And the other added benefit is the Towel Boys is almost my initials with TB. So anything with my initials, that's we're good to go. All right, this is the Towel Boys podcast.
Yeah.
All right, what is this, the fourth show we've got a name? That's good. That's a good ratio. All right, UNLV, we got a 10-8 basketball team. You think we'd be saying that, Mike, a 10-8 basketball team?
I did not think they would be 10-8 at this point in the season, no.
All right, lost San Diego State. 6-point loss, game UNLV somewhat controlled until the last 8 minutes or so. Basically, at the end of that game, Doug Gottlieb, who was the color analyst, was just saying, you know, UNLV doesn't know how to win a game. They don't know how to close out a game. San Diego State does, blah, blah, blah. Basically, learning how to win a game is probably my least favorite cliche because it doesn't mean anything.
It basically means that you won the game.
Yes, and when a team doesn't know how to win a game, or when somebody says that, all that means is you were worse than your opponent on that day, and specifically worse than your opponent in the last 5 minutes, last 3 minutes, whatever it is. Because my question is, when do you learn how to win? You lose if you're a team that loses a lot, because learning how to win typically comes with either a young team, like in this case, or it comes with a team that is sort of resurgent and they were terrible a year before and now, okay, we're more experienced, we learned how to win. When do you learn? Because you don't learn by losing and then all of a sudden you learn and you win a game. I don't understand that, because it doesn't mean anything.
And it's not like UNLV has been just dropping close games all season, every single close. I mean, they started off the season by winning, you know, just a string of one possession games. So did they know how to win against Morehead State or Sam Houston State, games that they won at the buzzer right down to the wire? And did they forgot how to win between then and now?
Apparently. Because, and, you know, it was Morehead by one, Sam Houston State by two. You know, they went to overtime with Portland. The Temple game ended up being single digits. I think it was 7. They beat Arizona by 4. Like, you know, their biggest win, it's not like they blew Arizona out and just coasted. They had to win that game late. I guess after Christmas, they forgot how to win. They just forgot about it because they were closing game outs. Now, most of those teams not very good, but they were still... They knew how to win early in the year in the last 2 minutes, and all of a sudden, I don't know. But that is probably my least favorite cliche that's used, because it doesn't mean anything. What happens is one team doesn't know how to win and one team doesn't know how to lose. It's one team is better than the other team on that particular day and in that particular moment of the game. San Diego State was better. I mean, we've talked about defensively the last few games, UNLV can't get stops, and they didn't really get stops late, but the offense, what, they finished 2 of 15 on their last 15 shots from the floor, and without Cody Doolin's kind of free layup there in the last 45 seconds, or however long it was, UNLV would have, like, ended the game on, I think it was a 4-minute scoreless drought. So, they were awful in the last 4 minutes. I mean, that's as bad as you can look in the last 4 minutes, 5 minutes of a game as possible.
The offense just simply died. It just died. San Diego State, they played that pressure defense. UNLV went to Dave Rice went to a very, very short rotation for this game. He kept his five guys on the floor for pretty much the entire game, and then they just died the final, you know, 10, 12 minutes. They had nothing left. And San Diego State just smothered them on defense.
Yeah, if you look at the minutes of these starters, Chris Wood played 32. That's the fewest. Vaughn played 37. McCall played 37. Doolin 33. And Okonobo 36. I mean, you got 10 minutes out of Kendrick, 9 out of Dwayne Morgan, and 6 out of Cornish, and that's it. Okay. And... yeah, I mean, they were tired. I think that was pretty evident. Nobody's going to like that excuse. Nobody's going to really be okay with that being an excuse. But honestly, I think that's what it was. This team was exhausted late, and all the energy they put in early to build a lead, what was an 11-point lead, they kind of lost it. And, they didn't score late in the game, and offensively they didn't look good. But, and I know there will be a lot of people that are yelling, you know, Dave Rice doesn't call plays. They were running plays late. Because Gottlieb even highlighted it, and it's a play UNLV's run where you have an elevator screen for your wing player. There's also a post-up option for Rashad Vaughn, and then there's a pop-out option for the four-man, who sometimes was Chris Wood, late was Jalon Kendrick, to catch and get an ISO. So they ran a play, and they ran it like three or four times in a row, but it didn't work very well. San Diego State defended it very well. And so late in the game, UNLV, they were still running plays, running sets. San Diego State just defended them well, and I didn't think they were the best sets UNLV has to really get something going. But they were running plays, so don't criticize Rice for not calling plays. Criticize Rice for maybe not calling good plays, or maybe not even having good enough plays to beat San Diego State.
And that's a good defensive team. You're not going to be running plays that just, you know, result in layups and just open shots around the basket just by running your stuff. You know, you need players to execute and then to make plays against a team like that.
Yeah, and the other part for UNLV was a lot of their best offense came, you know, getting out and running to some degree. They didn't run a whole lot, but getting a little bit of transition that they did in the first half. And when you're letting I know you tweeted out, what did San Diego State, 7 of their last 8 possessions, is that what it was?
They scored on San Diego State last 5:52, scored on 6 of the final 7 possessions. That's not including they had a travel with 23 seconds left where they just basically gave up the ball.
Yeah, so you can't get out and run when the other team scores on basically every possession, which hurts their offense as well. They weren't going to beat San Diego State in the half court of the last 5 minutes of that game. They were going to need to get something easy, something out of the ordinary, and they didn't get it because their defense wasn't good enough. Playing that 2-3, because they played it, I think there was like 2 possessions maybe in the first half where they played man on like a baseline inbounds or something like that, but basically played that 2-3 zone the whole time. Worked pretty well. The one thing, though, that was kind of odd with it is the two guards, which is pretty much McCall and Vaughn the whole time, were playing pretty high up, and then the three guys on the back were playing like 2 steps away from the baseline almost. So there was a lot of space at the free throw line, and when San Diego State did have success, it was because they got it to the free throw line, and then either they got a guy driving or he would kick it to their side of the court for a three. So there was still a hole there, but overall, I mean, I thought playing a 2-3 zone, and they did play a little 1-3-1 too, was the best defensive decision they could have made all game.
Well, San Diego State, it's not a difficult decision to say we're going to play some zone against them. They don't have anyone that's going to scare you from the three-point line. No real shooters to speak of. So it's not an innovative decision to play zone against them. But I did think that UNLV was effective while they had their legs under them. The first, you know, 3 quarters of the game, it looked good. They were closing off driving lanes. The middle wasn't as open. I thought when you saw the cracks in the defense was late in the game when they were tired, too tired to rotate. That's when you saw San Diego State starting to find creases and making quick passes and guys not rotating quickly enough, and that's when they started getting shot after shot after shot right at the rim.
All right, Chris Wood. He got benched the last 2.5 minutes or whatever it was for Jalon Kendrick. I mean, he got pulled out a couple other times, but He did not finish this game out. He has 2 points on 1 of 4 shooting, 3 rebounds, and he did block 3 shots. What do you think the deal is with Chris Wood? Because we saw him dominate against Arizona. We saw him show out against Wyoming, and he's had some poor performances, but this was a big stage, and UNLV needed offense from somewhere, and Chris Wood wasn't there.
Well, what I saw tonight was part of becoming a superstar player, or, you know, a well-known offensive player. If you want to lead your team offensively, you have to deal with more defensive attention. And you saw every time Chris Wood touched the ball in the post, he got double-teamed immediately. San Diego State was not going to let him put the ball on the floor towards the basket unless he was driving out from beyond the three-point line and trying to drive out from the perimeter. They weren't going to let him face up in the mid-range. They didn't want him to post up around the basket. So they double-teamed him every time, forced the ball out of his hands. That's something that Wood hasn't really dealt with. I think there was one other game, I forget the opposing team, but there was one other game this year I remember him getting double-teamed pretty regularly. And that's something he's got to learn how to do. You've got to give the ball up, and then you've got to work to get it back. I haven't rewatched the game yet, but that's something that you've got to give the ball up, and then you've got to work. That can't be the end of the play for you when you kick the ball out.
Yeah, they would double him. He caught it in the short corner, and Dwayne Morgan did a couple times too, and they sent the double team right away at Wood. There was one time he made a good pass across the court to McCall for a three because the double had come and they had to decide who to guard on that weak side. But then there was, you know, two possessions later, the same thing, and he ended up having that really bad turnover where he tried to throw it to Vaughn at the free throw line, and there was San Diego State's defender slacking off of Cody Doolin was standing right there. So he didn't make very many good decisions getting out of that double team, which to me, if you're Chris Wood, there's nobody in the Mountain West that's going to be able to send two guys at you that are just athletically intimidating to you. If they double Chris Wood, that should be viewed as an opportunity. Okay, we can play 4-on-3 while they double me. I've got to be able to get this pass somewhere else. And he didn't do that very well in this game, but I think he's athletic enough to, okay, you're going to double me. I can get the ball around you guys to my teammates and somebody's going to be open.
But I'm not making excuses for Chris Wood or the way that he played against San Diego State, but that seems like a thing that will depend a lot on reps for big men. Yeah. Passing out of the double team is not the first thing that they teach you. Chris Wood hasn't even been playing with his back to the basket for very long. That's something that they've just started to drill into him starting this season, is, you know, backing down and playing like as a true post player. So I don't expect him to be throwing pinpoint passes and reading the defense, you know, two moves ahead and finding open guys, you know, like it's nothing. So I don't expect that right away. But, yes, I think at this point they've got to do something to take advantage of teams that do want to double-team him or play special defenses against him.
Dave Rice didn't really run a play for Chris Wood in this game, at least that I noticed, because they have one play that's been pretty effective. I know they killed Temple with it, where Doolin comes off a ball screen at the top of the key and Chris Wood runs off a block-to-block screen and Doolin feeds Wood and he's got a layup. I would assume San Diego State would have been able to stop that because it's pretty simple, but I don't even think UNLV tried it once in this game, which, I don't know, is a little surprising. You'd figure, okay, let's get Chris Wood going. He has no points at half or whatever, but there could have been a little bit more, but ultimately Chris Wood's a good enough player that he can't, I mean, regardless of who his coach is, regardless of what plays they run, he's got to be better than 1 of 4 shooting when your team is just absolutely struggling to score in the second half of that game, and the first half, honestly. They only had 24 in the first half. So, did you see, though, after the game, he was retweeting a lot of stuff?
I did see that.
A lot of negative stuff, but some positive stuff,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, as part of my duties as a writer covering UNLV, I follow all the players on Twitter, and he was retweeting a lot of negative stuff that was getting sent, that came across the screen. Not even tweets that had him mentioned by handle in them, but that just had his name, at, you know, in plain text, which means I think that he's, you know, searching for his name after the game, pulling out those tweets and then retweeting them, I guess, to maybe to motivate himself or for some reason. But, I mean, is that a good sign? Do you want the guy? I don't know how to take that.
I don't mind it. I don't know. I don't think it's going to matter, really, if he plays better or whatever. I think Dave Rice pulling him out of the game or somebody within that coaching staff yelling at him makes a bigger difference than him retweeting stuff. But I don't know. I know me personally, if somebody tweets something negative about me, I get excited and I would retweet it too. Like, I don't know. I like people that tweet negative things about me. Like if somebody tweets at us about this, I'm going to be more than happy if it's somebody hating on us. So I don't mind it. I don't think it's going to make a difference whether he's motivated or not. I would hope that getting pulled out of a one or two possession game with 2.5 minutes left and you're desperate for a conference win would be more motivation than people talking crap about you on Twitter. But I don't know. But it's bizarre that he can be as good as we've seen and then be, you know, this kind of useless offensively, because, you know, at the very least, you can be a successful decoy, which he wasn't a successful decoy. All he really did was get trapped and then, you know, he turned it over, what, 3 times in the game. So
it's a game that he really has to make an imprint on in one way or the other. It's a very big game, and he really, you didn't notice that he was out there.
He's got an 8-man rotation. They basically had a 5-man rotation against San Diego State. I know Ed Graney of the Review Journal has been harping on you got to bench players if they're not giving the effort, blah, blah, blah. Dave Rice doesn't have that option, does he? Like, you can't – like, he benched Chris Wood for Jalon Kendrick tonight. Like, that's who you're benching him for, or for a 32% shooter, Dwayne Morgan. Like, Chris Wood going 1 of 4 for 2 points is better than Jalon Kendrick or Dwayne Morgan.
Well, before they left for San Diego, Rice was talking to the media, and that came up, you know, the subject of, you know, why don't you bench these players if they're not giving effort? Why don't you send a message? And Rice was, I thought he was pretty honest with the media in the way that he said, basically, it's a production versus effort issue. His example was, you know, if you were going to start the 5 guys who tried the hardest, you know, Barry Chaney would be one of your 5 starters. But the cold hard truth is that Barry Chaney can try as hard as he wants. He's not going to produce what Chris Wood produces, you know, on the court. And he said, Chris Wood, for all his ups and downs in terms of effort, you know, they need him out there because he rebounds. You know, even if he's not playing 100% as hard as you want him to play, he's still pulling down 10 rebounds a game. And for a team that can't rebound, they need that. They can't bench him for, you know, Kendrick or for Morgan or for guys who aren't going to get those rebounds. As much as he wants to send a message, you still have to try to win games. I thought that was very honest and sort of looking at, you know, whether you do it or whether you don't, you're just trying to do what's best for the team. And that's something that, you know, Rice has had to grapple with in, you know, the recent weeks.
Yeah. And how do you view that? Because I view that, I think there's two folds to it. The first one is, I don't fault Dave Rice for not benching Chris Wood, because I think Chris Wood, even if he's kind of disappearing, is a better option than what he has, and he doesn't have much to go to. But the second option of that is, this is Dave Rice's team. This is Dave Rice's roster. Ultimately, the blame falls back on him for only having an 8-man rotation and not having that good option off the bench to, okay, Chris Wood, you're not doing anything for us. We're going to put somebody else in. I mean, it's, you know, I don't blame Rice for not benching him, but at the same time, you look at it and say, well, this overall problem still falls back on Dave Rice.
I mean, if Dwayne Morgan was producing the way that you might expect a 5-star recruit to produce midway through his freshman year, then you might have more options in terms of taking minutes away and, you know, giving them to Morgan. But there just aren't that many options in the front court. You can't afford to sit Chris Wood for that long, whether that falls on Dave Rice or not, for constructing the roster. I mean, he thought he was going to have more options. It hasn't worked out that way. He's sort of now he's trying to navigate that situation that he created and that he's sort of overseeing. That's what he's dealing with. Does he want to send a message or does he want to try and win games?
All right, Mike, what's UNLV's best five? What's their best lineup?
Best five, I would probably go Doolin, McCaw, Vaughn, Wood is out there, and then it's Okonobo, I would guess, although I don't really like Wood and Okonobo at the same time, but I'm not seeing the stats say that it's Doolin, Vaughn, McCaw, Morgan, and Wood. That's what the stats say. So that's what I would go with.
See, you know, I think Pat McCaw is number one. I think he's the best player on this team right now. Rashad Vaughn has to be out there. And then after that, you know, based on the last game, good luck Okonobo for sure, but based on a season's worth of stuff, I think I'd rather have Chris Wood over good luck Okonobo if I'm choosing one, and then Morgan and Doolin. But, you know, we talked about what Doug Gottlieb wrote about Cody Doolin after the Arizona game, that he's not athletic enough to handle the better teams in Division I basketball, and that suffers. I'm ready to agree with Doug Gottlieb. I think we've seen enough, especially this last game, that we can say Cody Doolin isn't athletically good enough to be a point guard on a team that's going to win a lot of games against good teams.
So you want to hand the reins to McCaw as the one? Do you want him running the team? Do you want him as the primary ball handler, lead guard, whatever you want to call it?
Against San Diego State, yes. Against, you know, Cody Doolin is a perfectly great point guard to beat, you know, everybody but San Diego State, I'd say, in the Mountain West. You know, I think the turnovers against Boise State, I think, are kind of an aberration. Or, you know, those are not what we've seen from Cody Doolin this year. Boise State's not the team that really would fluster him that so much. But I think looking at the schedule, including games they've played, you know, Utah, Kansas, even though he did pretty well against Kansas, Arizona, San Diego State, those teams, yeah, I'd rather have Pat McCaw running the offense more than Doolin. But against Air Force, against Colorado State, against Boise, I think I'd rather have Doolin out there just because I kind of want McCaw off the ball a little bit more because he can be more creative that way, in a sense.
I like them playing together for the fact that you play those two with Rashad Vaughn. It gives you three shooters, three guys who can knock down a shot on the perimeter. Although Doolin is not, you know, taking a lot of shots this year. He's not been much of a spot-up threat, a catch-and-shoot guy, but I like the option of having three guys spread out on the perimeter that can make shots. So if, you know, I wouldn't necessarily start one over the other. I would like to see, like they did tonight, I would like to see those three guys, Vaughn, McCaw, and Doolin, get a chance, you know, for a few games to run together and see what they can produce.
Doolin killed UNLV's offensive spacing against San Diego State. I mean, after he'd make the first pass, he didn't go anywhere productive. He would kind of stand 5 feet beyond the three-point line at the top of the key or kind of on a wing. Like, he wasn't a productive off-the-ball player at all in this game. And he hasn't been very productive off the ball, and, you know, but he's at least been in the corner a lot more, or he's cut through somewhere else. But against San Diego State, I mean, he would pass it, and then he would be near the half-court logo the rest of the possession if he never got it back.
Is that a schematic thing, or is that something where Doolin has to take more charge and be more aware of, you know, where he's standing, while not just sort of watching the play, but sort of be more active in terms of finding space and making an opening for himself?
I feel like Doolin was almost expecting whatever offensive set or whatever they were trying to accomplish. I think he was like expecting it to fail and was kind of the emergency option. Okay, throw it back out to me with 12 seconds on the shot clock and we'll try to get something else. Like, I haven't seen that a ton for, like, this year. Normally he'll stand out there sometimes, but a lot of times he'll cut to the corner and he'll be in the corner, which is good for spacing. Even if you're just standing there, it's good for spacing. Or he'll cut through to the block and then out back to the wing or something. Like, this was the least movement I've seen him after he passed the ball. So I don't know, maybe Dave Rice told him to do that, but it felt like he was expecting them to not get a good shot and to have somebody to pass it out to. So I don't know. I mean, I would have expected him to have a lot more movement, but I just felt that killed the offense, and they ended up with, okay, crap, because they did have to throw it back out a lot. Okay, crap, we got to throw it out to Cody. He's at half court. Okay, there's 10 seconds on the shot clock, and we got to get something real quick. And, you know, that's what San Diego State does to teams, but Doolin and UNLV could have helped themselves a lot.
Well, another question that raises, if that was their plan, was Do you want Cody Doolin to be the guy with the ball in his hands as the bailout option as the shot clock is winding down? Because I'm not sure he's the best guy to stand out there and create a shot on his own, and the best guy to get a shot in that situation.
Yeah, and definitely not against San Diego State. You know what's, because I ask you, what's UNLV's best five? Basically, three players scored against San Diego State. Doolin had that layup in the last minute, and Chris Wood hit a jumper in, I don't know, like 16, 17 minutes left in the second half. But otherwise, nobody scored off the bench. Vaughn had 17, McCall 15, and Okonobo 11. And that was your offense. It's bizarre. As good as San Diego State is off defensively, it's bizarre that UNLV only had three players score, and a lot of people think they should have won that game. There's a lot of people that think that, right? I'm not making that up. A lot of people think UNLV should have won that game.
Anytime you've got an 11-point lead, or even like a 6-point lead midway through the second half, that's a game that I think most people think you should win.
Okay, yeah, it's just...
But it's not the first time that's happened to UNLV either. The Arizona game, which is their biggest win, the three players scored all but two of their points in the second half, I believe. I think it was Vaughn, McCaw, and Wood who scored all but two of their points in the second half. So, I mean, it's not the most balanced team.
When they beat Portland, wasn't it like Doolin and Vaughn scored all of their points in overtime in the last, like, 5 minutes?
Yeah, except...
Or something crazy like that?
Yeah, so, I mean, they get into those stretches where, I mean, I guess you'd say they keep going to the well.
I'll say about Dave Rice, when an offensive set works, he will run it four times in a row or until you stop it. Like, if something works, he's going to go to it every possession until you stop it. It's almost like he's, you know, you're playing NCAA football on PlayStation or Xbox, and it's like, that play works, let's do it again until it stops working, and then throw the controller because it stopped working. But, I don't know, I don't know what UNLV's best five. I feel like Jordan Corner should play more.
Well, here's a question that sort of feeds into the best five. I know that you and I have talked about this throughout the season. What kind of defense do you want this team to play? Should they be playing a zone basically full-time?
I think so. I think so.
Looking at their personnel, I don't see a lot of – and watching the way that they defend on the perimeter when they're playing man – I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be in a zone, unless you want to point to defensive rebounding. But they're not good at man-to-man anyways. So, I mean, I don't see a lot of reasons why they couldn't go to zone. I know that Dave Rice has always said, anytime you ask him, he says, my philosophy is man-to-man. UNLV will always be a man-to-man team as long as I'm here. But looking at some point, maybe you think you should sort of fit your system to your personnel, to the players that you have. And looking at this team, I think that a zone may work better for them.
I think a zone with only one of Wood and Okonobo in there is kind of your best defensive option. I really like the 1-2-2 zone they've played. They didn't play it against San Diego State because they were saying, okay, yeah, shoot the three, San Diego State, and that's what a 2-3 is for. 1-2-2, you take away a few more threes if you do that besides the corner. But I like, you know, McCaw and Doolin and then Vaughn, Okonobo, and Morgan as a zone defense team. Like, I think that's a pretty solid zone defense because – as long as you put Doolin and Vaughn on the opposite side of the court, you're not going to have any major holes in that zone defense, and you can funnel everything to Okonobo, who's going to swat 80% of the shots that come up at the rim.
I'm starting to come around. I think that it's something that San Diego State, yeah, it's an easy decision because they're not a good shooting team, but I mean, in the Mountain West against these, what do you have to lose at this point? You know, try it out, maybe see if it works. The zone defense numbers have been, last time I checked, pretty good for UNLV defensively. And like I said, one of Okonobo and Wood in there at a time. You could play one. Wood is not a bad defender. I mean, sort of interchangeable on the defensive end, I would say. I mean, Okonobo is a good shot blocker. It's not like Wood is not also a good shot blocker. Sort of keep those guys maybe a little bit fresher. Keep the less of an emphasis on perimeter defense, less, you know, switching ball screens and less complicated for the perimeter guys. Like you said, just sort of funnel things towards your big guys. I mean, I think it's worth taking a look.
Yeah, I think that's their best defensive option is the 1-2-2, and you can throw in some man-to-man when you want. You can throw in some 2-3, but I think that's their best. Defensively, so during the Boise State game, I tweeted out, who are these people that think UNLV is a bad defense? And apparently there's a lot of people that think UNLV is bad defensively, which kind of blew my mind. I'm in no way saying they're a great defensive team, but they are by no means a bad defensive team. Before I lay into whatever I'm going to lay into, UNLV defense, what is it to you?
Here's what I'll say. The reason why everyone watches and thinks that UNLV is the worst defensive team that they've ever seen is because in the final 5 minutes over the past month, they have been the worst defensive team that you've ever seen. They let teams score on more than 80% of their possessions in the last 5 minutes of these games. And those are the ones that stick in your mind. No one's going to remember a good defensive stop midway through the first half. No one's going to remember that. What they remember are watching Wyoming score 7 out of 7 times down the stretch, Kansas 12 out of 18, UNR 7 out of 8, tonight 6 out of 7. Like, that's what people remember. So they just remember UNLV getting just run down and scored on the play after play after play. So that's why people think that they're a terrible defensive team.
Yeah, I do get that. But it's just, I don't know, because they're a top 80 KenPom defense. That's not great by any means, but if you're top, there's 350 teams. If you're top 80, you're not bad. They're third in the Mountain West in defensive efficiency. If you look at this team statistically, they're only bad in two categories on defense. One is forcing turnovers. They just don't force turnovers. And the second is they give up a lot of offensive rebounds. But otherwise, their opponent's field goal percentage is really, they're great at holding opponents to bad shooting percentages. They're great at blocking shots. Teams do not get to the free throw line very frequently. They're very good at a lot of things defensively. And even with the offensive rebounding, if you look statistically at their opponent's field goal percentage after getting an offensive rebound, it's like 33%. Like, teams are only converting one-third of the time after they get an offensive rebound. It's like third best in the country right now. Virginia and Kentucky are the only two that are better. Like, one of their flaws is giving up offensive rebounds. When they do that, teams still don't score. And the reason is, part of the reason they give up offensive rebounds is because, one, they don't block out very good at all. They're terrible at that. But they go to block shots. They're trying to block every shot because they, you know, who doesn't love block shots? That leaves guys open to get offensive rebounds. But once they get those offensive rebounds, Okonobo or Wood or even Morgan, they're still there and they have enough time to recover and either block your shot again or at least force you to throw it up off the rim or off the backboard, whatever. So even their biggest flaw of giving up offensive rebounds is still not that bad because teams don't shoot that well. And somebody tweeted at me during that Boise State game that the defensive metrics were skewed because of how good they were blocking shots. That was the tweet, and it confused me because, you know, that's like saying a football team's only good at offense because their quarterback's really good. Like, the Patriots are only good at offense because Tom Brady's really good. Like, no shit. Like, I didn't comprehend how blocking shots skewed the metrics. Like, it doesn't matter how you keep teams from scoring, as long as you keep teams from scoring. It doesn't matter if you've got great shot blockers or no shot blockers. There's no right style of defense besides keeping the ball out of the hoop.
Blocking shots is a good thing. Like, going for a pump fake and, you know, and getting blown by is a bad thing, but blocking shots is a good thing. Like, if you're blocking 8 shots a game, that's a good thing.
Yeah, and the other thing on UNLV defense and me on Twitter, for anybody that saw, I got into a lengthy debate with Ed Graney about UNLV on defense. And the one thing that annoyed me the most was he said UNLV rarely switches screens, which is the most false thing. I don't understand how you can watch UNLV basketball, except for maybe San Diego State because they played zone the whole time. But they switch every single ball screen where the screener is a shooter. Every single one of them. And Ed Graney tried to tell me they never switch screens.
Did you take him to task?
I did. And because he said something about defending ball screens, and I said, they switch every ball screen, so what are you talking about? And he said, well, what about the Nevada one, where they gave up the game-winning shot? And I tweeted him the link to my article that where I broke down what happened. And I here's what I think. I think, because he wrote about that. He wrote about the Nevada game after the San Jose State game, which didn't make sense to me either. But he wrote about that, and I'm assuming that's like, he watched that play over and over, and that's his imprint of UNLV defense the whole season. Doesn't matter what they do, that's UNLV defense the whole season for him.
It's because sort of ironic that he would make the point also during a Boise State game, whereas if you go to a UNLV practice leading up to a Boise State game, it's basically everything they practice defensively is how they're going to switch the various types of ball screens.
I get, because I was arguing with him during the Boise State game. I guarantee, as he was tweeting, they rarely switch screens. UNLV was in the process of switching a screen. Because they switched every ball screen against Boise State. All five of them. Whoever it was, they switched. I was blown away that somebody, he was Nevada Sports Writer of the Year, too. Just throwing that out there. Just whatever. They don't switch screens. Yes, they do. Every single one of them. But, all right. UNLV's 10-8. I said the last time we did this, they were going to have to go like 12-2 the rest of the way to get an at-large bid before the Mountain West tournament.
I think the record was 22-9. You had them at 23-9, 22-9.
Yeah, one of those two. Nine was the losses, yeah. So they have one more loss, in my opinion. They play New Mexico Wednesday, so that's not looking good.
I am not. I'm less confident in their at-large chances now than I was even a week ago, and I wasn't very confident a week ago. This is a team that's going to have to win the conference tournament to get in at this point. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, seriously, they're going to have to win the rest of their games or else win the conference tournament. It's either, you know, win 12, 13 in a row or win 3 or 4 in a row at the end of the year. So I guess after New Mexico, they get a pretty favorable stretch of Utah State, Nevada, Air Force. But then, you know, they go to Colorado State. That could very easily be a loss. They got to play Boise State at home. They got to go to New Mexico. They get Wyoming at home. They get San Diego State at home. They're not winning all of those. I mean, they'll probably lose to Utah State at home. You know, I don't know. There's no real at-large chance anymore for this team. It's gone. Which, I don't know, I didn't expect that at all. I really didn't expect them to be 10-8. I didn't expect them to have no shot at getting an at-large bid.
Yeah, I would feel the same way. Before the season, I think I picked them to finish second in the conference and to make the tournament as an at-large team. That's not going to happen now. But the groundswell that I'm starting to see on Twitter or from fans, you know, they sort of realize now that regular season is not going to happen for them. What I'm seeing a lot of people suggest is, hey, let's start playing these freshmen. Let's start retooling the team. Let's just try and get our best team together by the time the conference in time for the conference tournament and try and win those three games in 3 days. I mean, I'm not of the mind that you should punt the season at this point, but I mean, we did see Dave Rice start to tinker a little bit tonight. He's finally changing up the starting lineup. What do you think?
It would be great if there was like a draft pick in college basketball so you could tank for the draft pick. But tanking doesn't do you much good in college sports, which is, I don't know, I guess fortunate. I like tanking. I think I'm the only person that enjoys tanking.
Hey, if you're talking NBA basketball, that's a sound strategy. Celtics won way too many games last year. They made the mistake of hiring a good coach for a tanking team, for a team that should be tanking for a draft pick. And they rep Brad Stevens coached them to the number 7 pick. I don't get it.
Off topic, I don't know why people get so pissed with tanking. I mean, I guess I get it because you have a terrible team like the Sixers, but if losing now helps me in the future, why do you care? Like, if there's no NBA franchise, there's no baseball, there's no any franchise that's like looking to always be terrible. Like, they might not want to be terrible now because they think it's going to help them. To me, there's nothing wrong with having... Somebody's got to lose. The Lakers and Knicks aren't trying to lose this year, but they're pretty bad, too. So I don't have a problem with tanking. But with UNLV, I don't know. You're 10-8. They're 1-4. I don't know. Is it... Here, I'll say this. I don't know that UNLV's talent, I don't know that this recruiting class is anywhere as good as advertised.
And let's go through them. Rashad Vaughn, good as advertised, I would say.
Offensively, I would say he's, you know, he is an excellent player, but he is the top offensive option on this team, but he's not a high percentage shooter and he's not an efficient scorer. And so, you know, you can live with that, but when he's, you know, I guess Chris Wood can be a really good offensive option, but recently he hasn't. When that's really the only guy you have offensively and he's not an efficient scorer, that's, to me, I think, I would say a little overrated with Rashad Vaughn just because he's not shooting a high percentage. He's really good moves. He's had high point totals. Like, he's been extremely impressive a lot of the time. There's just, you know, he was 6 of 16 against San Diego State. That's not a high percentage. You're not going to win many games when your best player is going to go 6 of 16 every night. But he's not. He's by far, you know, he's, you know, other than Pat McCaw, he's probably the most excelled player this year. He's excelled the most this year, given expectations.
I think the way I would phrase it is, from what people were expecting and what the coaches wanted out of him, I think Vaughn has done his job. Yeah. I think he's filled the role that they wanted him to fill. I think McCaw has exceeded expectations. I think Okonobo Vaughn has done his job. Like, he hasn't provided really any offense, but that's kind of what you expected coming into the season. He's blocked a lot of shots. He's not the most polished defender. He's not, you know, moving his feet and, you know, moving side to side really well, but he blocks a lot of shots. He's good around the rim. I would say he's done his job as well. Cornish, I think if we weren't looking at an 8-man rotation, you wouldn't see much of Jordan Cornish this season.
Yeah.
I don't think that people expected him to be an instant contributor this season. He's been sort of been forced into a role where they need him to play minutes, and he really hasn't been up to making a big impact.
Yeah.
And then
the big one, the big black guy,
Dwayne Morgan, who just has offensively, defensively has not been what they expected and what they needed from him.
And then really, you know, beyond the freshman, you know, you had Cody Doolin coming in. Like, there's been a lot of times I've been impressed with Cody Doolin and like, yeah, he's really good, but I think I overvalued how good of a point guard he was going to be for this team.
I also say that he probably hasn't lived up to expectations in terms of what he's contributed to the offense. But I will say in his defense, I know this is the Towel Boys podcast, and we like to lean on the numbers a little bit, but having been here and covered this team last year, when there was just such a void of leadership and just no one that would step up and take control of the team, no one that played with a good attitude or, you know, pulled the team together during practices or during games. And you can sort of lose sight of that when you're in the middle of it. But then when someone like Doolin comes in here and you see all the positive effects that it can have, I think that there is something to be said. I don't know how much to be said, but there is something to be said for leadership and just be, you know, sort of filling that role, which I think he's done. And I think the coach is one of the biggest reasons they wanted him here. Was for his personality and the way he could influence, you know, sort of the younger players coming in. And I think a lot of the guys do look up to him. On the court, I would say offensively, he's had against some of the lesser teams, he's played well. Hasn't really had a great game against any of the top opponents yet. So I would say probably a little bit less than what was expected.
And UNLV needed a player to talk to the media after losses too.
Every game. He's filling that Anthony Marshall role from 2 years ago when he was trotted out every time.
But, Dantley Walker plays against New Mexico, doesn't he?
I don't know. He hasn't. He played some minutes San Jose State the last home game. He got 4 minutes in the first half. Another home game, maybe throw him out for a couple minutes. I don't expect it, frankly. I mean, at this point, I don't see any reason to expect him to play.
I don't know that I expect him to, but I think you need to. I do. I think you got to put him out there. And if UNLV comes out against New Mexico and, you know, they've got a 20 points under 12 minutes in the first half, sure, you don't need him. But if they come out there and they've got 6 points after playing 8 minutes, I think you got to put him out there. I mean, he is by far the guy that can get his shot off the quickest and the easiest. He's the best three-point shooter on this team, and at the very least, if he's not, you know, if he can't get open, that means somebody's probably face-guarding him, and you kind of take a defender out of the equation entirely. Put Dantley in with Pat McCall. That's your one and your two, and play zone defense.
I could see it happening, at least trying it, but I just, from looking at the first 18 games, I'm getting the sense that the coaching staff does not see him as an option.
I want McCall, I want Dantley, I want Cornish and Barry Chaney, and then you can pick the fifth guy.
You want the all effort team.
Yes, the all effort team against New Mexico. Maybe that's what they need, the all effort team to go rip off 6 in a row for him and give him hope.
I don't know. I think Wood has a better chance of putting up a 20-10 than anyone on the all effort team putting up those numbers.
All right. Last thing we're going to talk about is broadly with the Mountain West Conference. The Missouri Valley Conference commissioner was quoted in some newspaper in Indiana. I don't remember the city. That they were hoping to get the Missouri Valley Conference, Mountain West Conference challenge active again. They were hoping to have an agreement by, you know, in the next month or so. So for those that don't know, and I didn't really know, this was a challenge from 2009 to 2012. The Mountain West won two of those 4 years. The Missouri Valley won once, and they tied in 2011. UNLV went, they beat Southern Illinois, Illinois State, and Northern Iowa. They lost at Wichita State, so they went 3-1 in that. But a lot of people aren't very thrilled with this. And I understand why you wouldn't be thrilled with it, but a lot of people are like saying it's a mistake and it shouldn't happen, which I didn't quite understand because it's only one non-conference game. It's not like that's going to kill you or something. Just take Portland off your schedule, for God's sake, if you're really that worried about it. But I don't know, what's your thought on Missouri Valley Mountain West Challenge?
Weren't you saying that a lot of these games were not televised
lot of the complaint. Yeah, a lot of the complaints were that a lot of the games weren't on TV. I don't know. I wasn't, you know, out here in 2009 and 10, but that's what a lot of people were complaining about, that it wasn't on TV. And so, you know, I'd imagine you'd be able to figure that out. At the very least, though, it'd be online on the Mountain West Network if it's a home UNLV or it's a home Mountain West game, because all the basketball games are on there.
I mean, frankly, the way that Rice's philosophy seems to be, he's trying to ramp up the marquee out of conference games. He's got his teams that he wants to play. He wants to play big games in the non-conference schedule. I mean, it's so beyond your Dukes and your Kansases and your Arizonas, if you're switching out, you know, a Moorhead State, you know, for a Missouri Valley team, is that really going to make that big of a difference in the end in your RPI or your KenPom rating? Or is it going to really move the numbers that much?
No, not at all. And right now, according to KenPom, according to RPI, the Missouri Valley is better than the Mountain
exactly.
West.
Can the Mountain West really be looking down on any conference right now? I mean,
no. Maybe the SWAC. That's about it.
So,
but no, I don't. I mean, listen, it's not going to get you all hot and bothered and excited about college basketball. But there's no problem with UNLV playing Missouri State or Southern Illinois or Northern Iowa or whoever it is they get matched up. I guess you don't want Evansville. Evansville is usually pretty bad, but it's not going to kill you. Like, it's to me, it's not a big deal. I don't know why people would complain so much about it. Like, like you said, Dave Rice isn't going to go, oh, we got Southern Illinois on the schedule. Looks like we better cancel that Kansas series.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how this happens. It's going to be, oh, Southern Illinois, okay. Sorry, we're not going to play Portland this year. Like, okay, big deal. Like, I don't know. It's not a big issue, but people...
Dave Rice was willing to squeeze the Kansas game in after they started Mountain West play. So, I mean, he'll do what it takes to get those marquee games on the schedule. I don't think this is going to stop them from scheduling aggressively, which is the way that he seems to want to go.
Yeah, and, you know, sure, you're going to have some San Jose State-Evansville matchups that nobody's going to even blink at, but, oh well, that's okay. There's some terrible matchups in, like, the SEC Big 12 Challenge, too. You get TCU and Mississippi State, like, uh-oh. Watch out, two teams that, like, have combined to win two conference games the last 6 years. But, oh well. Anything else about this 10-8 basketball team?
New Mexico, is that a must-win game now? I don't feel like, unless you think every game is a must-win and you think they're going to roll off the next 12.
I mean, technically you don't have a must-win until you're going to be eliminated from the season being over, but, yeah, I mean, they got to win every game. You can't lose the home game to New Mexico if you want any chance at the NCAA tournament, but I'll say they don't have a chance at the NCAA tournament, so it doesn't really matter if they win or lose. It's more or less, I don't know, I'd say at this point it's more or less about Dave Rice putting up a respectable season, a respectable amount of conference wins, and kind of saying, okay, you can't really fire me because we didn't go 4-14 in conference play. We went 9-7 or whatever.
Yeah. And so Pat McCaw stays in the starting lineup. He's I don't see how you can take him out after the way he played.
Oh,
he's the guy now.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Is he the most important player on this team?
When he went through that one stretch where a handful of games where he wasn't shooting well, and he had a couple games where he was turning the ball over a lot, but the past two games he's been spot on when he's playing like he was tonight. He looks like the best player on the team.
God, he was stroking it in the first half against San Diego State.
That was the first thing I noticed about him when he showed up for the preseason practice and then for the exhibition. The intra-squad scrimmage he's got a really good stroke. So even when he was missing shots, it sort of felt like a matter of time before they started going in. And he does so many other things. I think he does more things than anyone else on the team.
Oh, yeah. You can kind of classify most other players on this team as a one or two trick player. He's the only guy I think you can say is not that.
Good man defender. He's probably their only good perimeter man defender. Also really good zone defender. Good zone breaker. You saw him throw him in the middle of the zone and sort of, you know, facilitate from there. Good spot up shooter. Can make plays off the dribble. Passing in for himself. I mean, no one else on the team can do all those things.
He was, though, minus 11 against San Diego State in 37 minutes of a six-point game.
I'm gonna chalk that up to him just being on the court for so long.
Well, hey, Rashad Vaughn played 37 minutes and was only minus 3.
Hey.
You better check. That's it. Plus minus from one game determines Pat McCaw as a bad player. There you go. I don't care about his 15 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and whatever else he did. 3 steals. Jesus, he had 3 steals? Good Lord. I don't care. Nope, minus 11. Get him off the floor. Get Cornish in there. Cornish was only minus 2. Did Danley Walker play?
He was the only player finished with a positive plus minus. He played like the last 20 seconds. Like that final,
okay.
San Diego State had that last turnover where they just gave the ball away, and I think Walker came in for like the final possession.
Okay, I didn't really notice that. I'm just seeing him on the box score. Yeah, he was plus 2. There you go. Yeah, there you go. More reason. Dantley, put him in. Oh, well. Okay, the Towel Boys. Towel Boys. Good job, Mike.
Thank you.
I'm proud of
that. I've been sitting on that one all week. I'm glad that it's working.
You're sitting on it. You could have told me. You didn't have to wait. You could have told me.
Well, I wanted it to be organic, to happen, you know,
okay,
on the air, as it were.
You wanted the on-air surprise. I see. Okay. Yeah. See, you know radio stuff. You're not. don't sell yourself short. But all right, the Towel Boys. That's what it is. He's Mike Grimala from RunRevs.com. Tyler Bischoff from Mountain West Connection. com. We'll probably have another one of these next week. I don't know if they're 10-10, we might just call it a year and just wrap it up. Just be like, all right, that's it. There's nothing else. Well, no, Dave Rice will be on the hot seat, so yeah, we'll have plenty to talk about. Doesn't matter, win or lose. I just want interesting. Just be interesting. That's all I want. I guess we'll find out next week if they've learned how to win.
If they come out on top, then I guess. You know, they'll
have to dig out those study guides from the fall semester to see if they remember how to win.
And once you learn how to win, you never forget how to win. Once you win one close game, you win this game from then on.
All right. Mike Grimala, Tyler Bischoff, the Towel Boys. Thanks for tuning in.